Yeah, good, good. Baruch Hashem. Okay. All right. So the first thing that we said is then that for fruits that grow on the tree, you have to say Borei Pri Halei. Chutz Min Hayayin, except for wine. This I mentioned already in our shiur before, that with wine, Shal Hayayin, in the case of wine, Hu Omer Borei Pri HaGefen. Now, we would not consider wine as being fruit of the tree, but they do. And I pointed out that in reality, if it's grapes that you're eating, you have to make the bracha Borei Pri Hoetz. That's the bracha that you make. If, however, it's wine, this already has its own special bracha. Why? Because, obviously, wine is one of those things that are mentioned in the Bible as having very, very special significance. The yayin yisamach oved enosh, and we find all kinds of good references to wine, except that a person should not be a shikar. That the Torah also tells us not to. Okay? But the good use of wine, this is perfectly permissible, okay? And it's considered a blessing. All right, so for this, we have then a special book, and there's, you know, Borei Pri HaGefen. Now, notice again, I said just a few moments ago that with something like, for example, you know, blueberries, there are those who say that the bush upon which it grows is analogous to a tree, and therefore it should say Borei Pri or eats over it. We ask questions about what's a vine, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the average vine, I mean, if we would have, let's say, cucumbers go on vines, right?
Right.
Squash, eggplant, you name it, right? They grow on vines. And yet, for those things, right, watermelons and so on, what bracha do we make for them? Borei Pri HaGefen, exactly. We don't say Borei Pri HaGefen for them. Because Geffen is only the grapevine, it's nothing else but. But, to our sages, the Geffen was a type of a tree. And this we find, in, for example, in the book of Shoftim, there's a very famous marshal, the marshal of Yotam. I'll take a Tanakh in a few moments and we'll see, because it enters into the discussion that we have in the Gemara. Okay? All right. Anyway, let's take a look at the rest of this Mishnah first. Okay. Yal peros ha'aretz, and for fruit which grows on the ground, v'omer borei pri hadom. Right. And the bracha that we make is borei pri hadom. Chutz min hapas, except for bread. Shal hapas v'omer matzilah v'noretz. Again, it's the same thing that the same remark that I made before between mincha and maariv. To us, it would never seem, I mean, that we would equate bread with being fruit of the ground. And yet, our sages look into it very deeply and they say, look, how did this bread come into being? It's a Gemara that says, look at all the marvelous steps that had to take place before we could have bread. A person had to sow seed. A person had to grow it. Then after that, he had to reap it. He had to winnow it. He had to, you know, separate the chaff from the wheat, you know, the kernels and so on and so forth. And then he had to go and he had to mill it. And then after that, he had to go and bake it. And let's say if he's a commercial baker, he has to also go into the market and sell it. And so look at all the steps that took place between the time that the Ribbono Shel Olam not only enabled, you know, this seed to grow into the grain that we're eating, but look at all the steps that take place. It's a sign of the wisdom that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave to human beings in order to know how to go all through these various steps in order to enable us that we should be able to enjoy this bread. So it is then, as we see, derived from the ground, and therefore technically it could have been included in the bracha Borei Pri HaGefen. But because bread is so special to us, therefore we have a special bracha, and that is Hamotzi Lechem Haaretz. Okay? B'yal ha'yirokos, and when it comes to vegetables, so who on there, Borei Pri HaGefen? He also makes the same bracha, Borei Pri HaGefen. But Rabbi Yehuda, as we see, Rabbi Yehuda on there, Borei Min HaTshoim. He says, no, for vegetables, you don't make the same bracha. For Borei Pri HaGefen,
for vegetables, you should make a bracha borei minei deshoyim. Desha is herbs.
Herbs. Desha.
Okay, and again, we had, you know, the opening chapter of Bereshit. And what is the difference between Desha and Esav? So let's take a look at the Rashi. Okay? Alright, first of all, Rashi says, Chutz b'dayayin, right? Kesa b'vorchid, he says, you know, the Mishnah begins with that. How should we recite a blessing? So he says, Chutz b'dayayin, except for wine, shemitur chashivu, so, because of its importance, kovodoy brocha liatzmo. So that's the reason why they gave it a separate brocha. V'chein hapas, and likewise bread. Bread too is a very special thing, and that's why we have a separate brocha for it. Now, borei minei deshoyim. This is the bracha that Rabbi Yehuda said we should say for vegetables. He says, "Lefi sheyesh bichlal pri ha'adoma." He says, because included in the fruit of the ground, we have the deshoyim, uzeroyim. We have the deshoyim, desha, like herbs. Hi. Okay. We have herbs or grasses, right? And then we have Zeroyim, we have seeds also that come from the ground. And what is he talking about by seeds? He says, Kidon Kitnios. As for example, Kitnios. Kitnios are like peas, beans, and things like that. Essentially, they are seeds. But nevertheless, we know what is the bracha that we make if we were going to have peas or beans or something by themselves. Right, for a Pri Adoma. But he would say then that these are fruits of the ground, whereas the herbs would have a separate one. Rabbi Yehuda boy heker brocho lechol min amin. And the principle of Rabbi Yehuda is that he wants us to know in advance exactly what is the proper brocho to make for each and every species. Instead of having, as we do, a general brocho which covers anything in this broad category, he wants to know, he wants us to know, what are the individual species so that we would know what to make the proper bracha. So this idea of heker bracha, you know in advance what the bracha should be, what the right bracha should be. This is an underlying principle of making brachas, except that we're not as machmir, you know, we're not as strict in the application as Rabbi Yehuda was. And of course we don't accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. He's already too much machmir.
But he would also make a bore kriya adama.
Yes,
that
certain
wasn't
things, right.
Like
if it were fruit, if it were fruit, what he considered fruit of the ground, he would say bore kriya adama.
Like a cucumber, he might say adama.
Yeah, right.
But on
parsley, but let's say, right, parsley, celery or something like that, then perhaps he would say bore mina choyim for that. Right, exactly. David?
No, I said lettuce is enough.
Yeah, lettuce, right, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Lettuce would be the shayim?
Yeah, he would probably consider it the shayim rather than, let's say, like a melon or something like that. Yeah, consider like desha. All right, listen, he's entitled to his opinion. He was a great rabbi. As we saw before, Rabbi Yehuda sometimes, he disagrees very often with the Chachamim. Sometimes they accept the Chachamim's opinion, but sometimes we go according to Rabbi Yehuda. Remember, we had this business about the timing of Shmona Esrei. That in general, we try to adhere to Rabbi Yehuda's times. Okay? Like, for example, Shachris. When should we say the Shachris Shmona Esrei? So the Chachamim said, if you remember, at Chatzos, right, the beginning of the fourth parable, they said that you could say Shachris up to 12 o'clock, up to noon. Okay? But what Rabbi Yehuda say? He said Adala choice. You only have the first 4 hours. After that,
first
it's late, huh?
First
right,
one.
Beginning with dawn up to that particular point. And while the halacha, strictly speaking, would follow the chachamim, yet what is the recommended practice?
We do it.
We do it according to Rabbi Yehuda, right?
The
same thing, for example, with musaf.
You can say that all day long.
Right, exactly. The Chachamim said you could say Musaf all day long, and he said no Ad Zion choice. In other words, the first 7 hours of the day until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And again, we follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, even though officially, in an emergency, we can go according to the Chachamim. Like, for example, when we have a long winded service on the high holidays or something.
Yeah, but as long as you start it in the proper time.
Yeah, right.
So then it's
right. The important thing is at least to try to get in the Stilish Manesra,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
the Silence Manesra within the right time. Then the Chatzin can pray.
You can pray,
yeah. What do you mean without making motzi?
Well,
why a salad?
Well, because it consists of several things. Now, do you make...
You don't put any bread on
it.
Okay, now we're going to have a different problem. All right, depends what goes into the salad. Okay? And we're also going to have another principle that we're going to have to consider later on. We didn't get to it yet. We're only first beginning to dip into this area, okay? Right, right. First beginning to dip into it. And that is a principle that we have, that if you have two things, one is we call ikar. In other words, this is the important thing in your mind, the thing that you're mostly interested in eating. And the other one is tofel. The other one only is like secondary to it. Then in that case, we say that the bracha on the ikar is poter es hatofel. In other words, you know, the bracha that you make on the important food will already take care of the less important one.
You don't have to make a bracha with carrots or
something. That's correct. Right, absolutely right. If that's all that you eat. However, in order to be free of all doubt, yeah, I mean the carrots over there are only there for flavoring.
In it, not a carrot on the top.
No.
Yeah, he's not talking about a dish of carrots. He's talking about, for example, the fish comes with a slice of carrot.
When you cook it all together.
You know, for a little taste or something like that. So in that case, the shahakal that you make for the fish would already take care of whatever garnishes are on the plate.
But in the fish is also matzo mayo.
Nevertheless, you ask a very good question. You have to look, however, and see.
No, I mean, this
you know,
is
what is the next
is
result?
You have a
very good
right.
Right.
You have to make
exactly.
A bracha on every.
Exactly.
Well, that's why you
this
make
is the complications that you get in.
Well, the most
absolutely
if you,
right.
If you wash, you make
with,
a mozi.
Right. If you wash, you make and a mozi. That already takes care of all the food that you're going to eat during the.
You don't have to worry about it.
There are a couple of exceptions.
That's the way to
perhaps.
Get around it.
You know, one exception that may be, let's say if you have fruit at the end of the meal as a dessert. There are those who say that if you had the intention to have the fruit to begin with, then in that case you don't have to make a separate bracha.
It was part of the
but,
menu.
But, right, if let's say you were just about finished the meal and then you decided, gosh, I could use a piece of the fruit or something at this
well,
point, as an afterthought, then in that case we should make the bracha for the fruit.
If they bring out cake for dessert and live in the kitchen,
well, again, it would be the same principle,
yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Usually we consider, you know, that the average person is serving cake and tea or something like that, you know, so you don't have to make a separate bracha.
Would that be covered
but
in this chapter?
I have
we'll
a
get
question.
To ideas like that, yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry to waste your time.
Not
of
really. No discussion is a waste of time. If it's to learn, it's for us to know what to do, what the right dinim is, to understand it better, that's one
right.
Of the time.
The question of an admixture, a piece of cake with frosting on it,
yeah.
What is cube and what is the
right.
Can you do...
No, then you wouldn't do it on the frosting. That's considered
right.
Part of the cake.
All right.
Yeah, it's a minor part of the cake.
Right.
That's the whole purpose of that
yeah.
Rule.
That was
yeah.
My question. Okay.
With most of you, the kazayas business, how about with a piece of fruit? You have to... Yeah. I mean, just as the mission.
Okay.
What bracha do you make on cheesecake?
A whole hour.
An hour.
Yeah. Would you rephrase it, please? Because I'm struggling between two different ideas. Yeah.
All right. The question I have here is what is the minimum? What is the minimum amount of food you should eat without making a bracha?
Uh-huh.
I know that the idea is to make a bracha.
No. Okay, now that brings us to something else. You said minimum amount of food to eat without making a bracha. By that I assume what you're talking about is that we have... No.
Right.
I assume that what you're referring to is the fact that we have, you know, let's say... a food that I labeled before the ikar, and together with it you have something which is tofel?
No.
You're not talking about that. Okay.
If I'm in the field,
right.
And I just take one grape.
Okay. All right. That's a different problem now.
We'll come in the kitchen and take one piece.
Good. Okay, very good. Now that is a different problem. We have a principle that we're going to learn, Mr. Hashem, if not tonight, then we'll get to it next week in our shiur, okay? And that is, they come to a conclusion that a person should not enjoy anything without making the bracha. So no matter how minute the quantity is, you should, strictly speaking, make a bracha before.
Right.
The question is only, however, then, do you have to make a bracha afterwards? Now that depends on the quantity of the food that you've consumed. You understand? Mm-hmm. That's already a different problem. Yeah.
When you say enjoy anything,
yeah,
this is that it's been ingested. I mean,
right.
If you touch it,
eat
for a coat,
or drink
it feels
something.
Good to you. You don't have to make a bracha because it feels.
No,
good.
No. But of course, we have different brachas, a different category of brachas with what we call, for example, birchos hareach. In other words, you smell something very fragrant. Understand? So for that, it has its brachas too. As for example, the outstanding example would be, you know, very many besamim that we recite. That's birchos hareach.
If you hear something beautiful, a bird singing, is there a bracha to sing? Is the only senses we're talking about taste, basically?
No. There's certain upon what we call birchos re'iyah. If you see certain things happening, for example, the first time that you see in the month of Nisan, trees blossoming, so you make a bracha at that time.
For thunder, you make a bracha.
Correct.
You see a rainbow as well.
Exactly. The rainbow is another bracha.
You wouldn't make a bracha for hearing the shofar.
For hearing the shofar? On Rosh Hashanah, yes.
Oh, really?
Not that year, at the time.
It always not blossoms before all this.
I mean, what is the bracha that is recited when the blowing of the shofar? But before Shechiyonah, what is the bracha for the shofar? No, there's no such bracha. The bracha is Lishmoa Kol Shofar. We pray, we bless God who commanded us, who sanctified us and commanded us that we should hear the sound of the shofar.
But essentially what we're going to deal with here is eating, ingesting, and perhaps...
Yeah, here we're dealing with Birchos Hanen at this point, exactly. The other brachas will come in their own areas. Yes.
Getting to the point that you made, that you make bracha on anything that you consume. I thought if you just take something, you don't make a bracha.
Okay. This is true if, a woman is cooking or something like that. So otherwise she'd be busy making brachas all day long. Which is not a bad thing, but usually a woman has other things to do besides, right? But, you decide all of a sudden you have a yen or something, right? And you taste it. Now, even if it's only one pea, as you said, for example. Okay?
This is really a cynical question, but it's a genuine question. I think you said something, if you enjoy it. If I'm in food mart trying to decide whether or not to take the red grapes or the green grapes, I don't honestly know whether I'm going to enjoy them because they may be sour.
Correct.
So I might have to make a bracha before if I really have a doubt.
So you say Borei Pri
Waits.
Say Borei Pri Waits and you take your grape.
So if I really have a doubt, I'm going to enjoy it, but it may be sour.
I understand.
Sour, you still would make the bracha.
You're still grateful to God for having created
it.
Then you can take another
Borei Pri
to try to decide whether you really did enjoy
it.
You
can keep out with spoiled food.
No. That you don't have.
You get really complicated because if you think it's sour, the next person may not think it's sour.
Medicine, you don't have to make a bracha for.
Because
that's not in the category of food, technically. Okay.
I know we haven't covered this, but just the rules of thumb.
Yeah.
Anything you ingest, essentially,
that you may derive pleasure from. That the potential is there. Correct.
You just said it. He spent a whole shiur of an hour deciding on what the brother do on a cheesecake.
Yeah, I heard a rabbi give a shiur like that.
Yeah?
It was very interesting. An hour he tested.
So, what was his conclusion?
It depends on the recipe.
Right.
In other words, what predominates? Is it the cheese or is it the cake?
Some cheesecakes are made with a really thin crust, and the vast majority of the thing is really
cheese.
Some people make cheesecake, they put a big thick crust on it.
Right.
Then the question is, what percent?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the answer.
You have to get an engineer to figure it out.
Okay. That in itself is a very interesting question. Of course, the other thing, too, again,
ice cream sandwiches.
Yeah. Right, right. I say that if I eat an ice cream sandwich, I make a bracha for the ice cream, and then I'll make a bracha for the sandwich, okay? Or maybe I'll take a bite first out of the sandwich, because technically there is a certain order of precedence. A bracha, like, for example, let's say, Bari Minim and Zonos, should be recited before you say Shahakol. Why? Because if you said Shahakol already,
using
the mean, so to speak, right?
The Bari Minim and Zonos aspect.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Suppose
but by the way, Rabbi Rosenzweig disagreed with me. He says you don't have to make it on the crack. He considers it simply that the cracker is tofil to the ice
minor part.
But I happen to enjoy the cracker.
You eat the cracker than the ice cream. What if you're eating a bowl of cereal?
Yeah.
Or dry cereal with milk in it. You know, a bowl of milk and a bowl of cereal.
Sure.
Right.
You don't really know which is the
Yikar. I would say in this case that the cereal itself is the Yikar and that the milk is there.
So what do you say with the cereal?
Bari Minim Zonos in most cases. Not every case, but most cases.
It's made with wheat and
you're right. The wheat is no question.
It's
definitely Mizonos.
Rice Krispies.
The question is with things that are made out of rice and out of corn.
Well, rice, you'd have to say Bari
Minim.
Well, that's a question. But we paskin that you say Bari Minim Zonos. However, there's a big difference when it comes to what bracha do you say afterwards.
Right,
what
yes, because it could be Alam.
Yeah. If it is, right.
Right.
Correct. Do you say Alam Nechya or do you say Shahakol? So the answer is, in this particular case, that, I mean Bari Nefesh, that's correct. That you have to say Alam Nechya or Kalkola after something made out of wheat or rye, right, oats, okay? Spelt, I don't know if anybody ever sees what spelt is.
But I always thought you had to say both.
Huh?
You had to say Alam Nechya and
So gesunte hate, by all means do so. I normally do if I have a lot of milk in it. If I have only a little bit of milk, no. But if I have a lot of milk that I poured in that case, I would definitely say.
Well, what if you eat your cereal in the morning, you finish all the cereal, and you don't have the milk is left in the bottom.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you made your mizonos so that the cereal is the ikar, and then you're left just the milk. You want to drink out.
Gesunte hate.
So make shakel.
Well, wouldn't you have taken in some milk while you ate the cereal?
Sure.
You must have taken some milk.
Yeah.
It'd be sort of like the like Shabbat with the Kibbutz Bar War.
What I sometimes do, I'll tell you, okay, I'll make first the mizonos, and I'll take some of that. And then I'll make shahakol, and I'll take a spoonful of milk or something like that. So that way I figure out
I guess that's the answer.
I think that you could simplify it, though. I guess the purpose, the intent would be really to track it back to God and the miracles that God did that he provided.
This is
God's food, but where man deviated it or made formulas of it
creation,
I think that would bring out
factor, in deciding what bracha should be made, because certain things, for example, in one form, you would have to say one thing, in another form, you would have to say something else. Like, for example, there's a discussion. We said before, that, for example, corn, okay? Corn, naturally, what is the bracha that we make? Let's say you eat corn on the cob, what do you say? Okay. What if you eat popcorn?
I don't think that's the purpose of the bracha. So once I've taken and made man's creation out of whatever God is.
Well, listen, man was given the intelligence in order to make creations too. I mean, he's a partner with the Vedic.
Then I make another bracha. Thank God for my brain, but.
The way I solve the problem.
We say it every Shabbos.
If I'm going to combine milk and something, you know what I mean? Yeah. This is now man-made efforts.
No, it's not. It's still Sam, individual ingredients.
Sam.
All right.
The end of the first chapter in Bereishis, right? Technically, it's the beginning of the second chapter, but we say it every Shabbos, right? What is the last line of Vayikul? Sheh Boroh Elokim Lasets, right? God rested from all his creation, which God created. La'asois. Now what is la'asois? In order to do. Now, this is a very difficult word to try to fit into the context. Because la'asois, what is it doing? If it says, you know, God rested from all his work which he had created, Hashem Bora, that's it, it's a poshut sentence, right? But what is the word la'asois in order to do? So the answer is that in this case it implies that man was given by God the intelligence in order to carry on the work of creation of Ribbono Shel Olam, that we have a responsibility, la'asois, together with God. And that we are the shutafoi Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are the partners of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So in that particular case, if we take corn and we make it into popcorn, we're not demeaning something that God has created. We're using our intelligence to go a step further.
Make it a little more palatable.
Right. But I would say that, you know, if you're going to eat popcorn, probably shahakal would be the more proper bracha, because it's no longer in the pristine form of corn in which it was.
I solve the whole problem. I take a desires of bread, I make a mosi, and that's it.
That's all.
That's,
that's, the,
that's what I do. And then I don't, then I eat my cereal, milk, and anything else I want to eat.
Okay, let's just do a couple of lines over here in the Gemara. Every question that we ask is a very legitimate question.
Sure, because you're saying you can look at the bowl of cereal with the milk.
But let's do just a little bit Gemara, and then we'll call it a night.
You see, you started that.
I'm having problems with my throat again.
Okay.
Like a candy?
Oh, that's all right.
If you're not placing, you have
to be
dairy. Okay.
Minohani, Gemara wants to know now, where do we find a reference in the scriptures, right? Particularly in the Torah, if we have a reference, but if not, we'll settle for any other place in scriptures, for the fact that we should make a bracha for food. Is there any reference for it? So, the Tana Rabban, our rabbis taught, yeah, there is such a pasuk. There is a pasuk that says Kodesh Hilulim Lashem, which means literally it is sacred and it should be praised unto God. Melamed, therefore, these three words teach us Shetunim Brachol Lefneihem Achreihem, that the food that we are eating, right, deserves a bracha both before the eating of it and after we have finished. Mekanom Rabbi Akiva, so from this quotation, this citation, from this pasuk, if you wish, Rabbi Akiva said, Otzer liyodom, it is prohibited to a human being, sheyitom klum, that he should taste anything, kodem sheyivorem, before he recites the bracha. Now the only problem is, how do you derive that from Kodesh Hilulim? Okay? I mean, the principle has now been stated, but the question is, what is the source of this? So this already is a complicated business. Let me just cut it short. You know that there is a pasuk in the Torah which deals with the fact that if you plant a tree, the first 3 years that the tree is giving fruit, the fruit cannot be used. Okay? How about the fruit in the fourth year? So the answer is that over there, yes, it is considered Kodesh Hilulim LaHashem. In other words, it is sanctified, and it is a source of praise unto God, that deserves praise unto God. And of course, what did he have to do with the fruit of the fourth year? He had to take it to Yerushalayim, okay? And this is what was called Neta Ravai, okay? In other words, plants that had grown, you know, that have now reached the fourth year of growth.
What is it called?
Okay.
Neta
Ravai. Ravai means the fourth year of this case. Right. But there's another pasuk that speaks about Kerem Ravai. In other words, a vineyard in the fourth year. So, what are we talking about over here in the Kodesh Hilulim? So, Rashi explains, of course, based upon the Gemara, he says, the Neta Ravai, so he says, we're talking about plants in the fourth year. Take a look at Rashi. It's written over there. Umashma, he says, And the very fact that the word is hilulim, notice, mm-hmm. is that singular or plural?
Plural.
Plural, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mashma, the word hilulim, says shnei hilulim. The implication is that we're talking about two praises of God. Okay, my book is wrote down over here. I don't know. We have a better text over there.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out what it says over there. No, you have the same.
Yeah, so they're all made of the same pattern. Maybe your book.
Your book different?
Let me see. What is the word over there?
Ta'un.
Ah, ta'un. See, I couldn't figure it out from this crazy print over here. All right. He says, "Mashma shnei hilulim ta'un ba'chiloso kishetoflenu ba'shanu rabiz." In other words, it teaches us that there are two different blessings of praise that it requires when you eat it. When you eat it in the fourth year, shehu mutar ba'chilo, because in the fourth year we know that the plant may be eaten, the fruit may be eaten, it may be eaten at that particular time, right? And from the fact that the Pasuk says Kodesh Hilulim, it implies therefore two different brachas. From this, we derive the fact that you have to make a bracha before and a bracha afterwards. Okay. So I think I'm going to stop at this particular point because it gets a little bit complicated at this point. So next week we will continue over here and see that this Gatnish does a glot, that we have our problems. Because we're going to find out as to whether does the Pasuk actually say we must do it, or is it simply being used sort of as a prop in order to tell us, that this would be the correct thing to do.
Okay. The brothers.
No,
right.
What was the significance of the karam?
Okay, because the word karam is going to enter afterwards into the discussion. Karam. Let's begin. All right, I'll review the Mishnah and then
what page are we on now?
Lamed Hay.
Lamed Hay.
Yeah.
Lamed Hay.
So my voice holds out. I don't know. It's awfully hoarse again tonight. Yeah. Okay, so remember that the Mishnah begins with the following question: Kesem Mevorchim Ba'Peiros, what bracha do we make for fruits? And then it begins to subdivide it. And it said, Ba'Peiros are lawn for fruit that grows on trees. He has to make a bracha bar for your ways. Chutz min hayayin, except for wine. Shal hayayin, uomer bar for your gofer. Because when it comes to wine, he has to recite bar for your gofer.
Right.
So I pointed out last week, if you eat grapes, you have to make the bracha bar for your ways for that. Okay? But if you drink wine, then already you make the special bracha. And as Rashi explained, because wine and bread have a special importance in the Torah, they have a special importance in general, in other books of the Tanakh, and so therefore for them, a special bracha was created.
Does brandy go to charcoal?
Brandy?
Yes.
Brandy is a big problem.
No.
It is, really.
Yes or no?
No, brandy is a problem, and I'll tell you why. If essentially, it's brandy which has been distilled from any fruit other than grapes, then you're right. I mean, you're going to say shahakol nivadvoro for that, okay? Like, for example, let's take shlivovitz or something like that.
Yeah,
what are shlivovitz? Yeah, that's, let's say, plum or prune brandy, okay? So that is no question. That's shahakol. Problem is that there are brandies which contain wine in them.
Well, there are brandies which are grape brandies now.
Yes,
available.
Right.
With those, what happens?
So, once you put it in, really you don't know whether it's fish or it's fowl. The memes goes off. I have the same objection right now to some things that Kenem is putting up. They have these 48 series. Have you seen it?
No.
Peach wine, apricot wine, and things like that and so on. At first blush, you take a look at it, and you figure, okay, after all, if it's peach brandy or apricot brandy, it's no question. You say shahakal, that's all. No question about that. But then you read carefully, and it says it's grape wine with an admixture of this and that. So, in other words, what is it now? Is it is it peach, or is it really grape wine with a little flavoring thrown in order to give you the illusion that it also has peach in it?
So is this going to be discussed here? Or
no, they don't discuss it over here. The question will be discussed to a certain extent. It's not discussed, because in those days they didn't adulterate these things. Prost and Pasha. If you drank wine, you knew it was grape wine, okay?
But there was also a question of whether the wine has been cooked or not.
That's already a different problem. That's what we call Yain Mevushal. I'll come back to that in a second. Okay. But this business, as I say, what bracha to make, I would say that if the preponderant majority of it happens to be grape wine, then it should be Borei Pri HaKofen, even if they've thrown in other flavors. Okay?
So brandy, certainly, even though it's distilled beyond wine, since it's a grape wine.
Correct. And of course, it means something else too, as far as brandy is concerned. That is the question, about, does it require hashgacha or not? In the sense that, for example, we take beer. Everybody accepts the fact that beer doesn't require any special hashgacha, because the only way that you can make beer is by using the old world formula for it, hops and the other things and whatever they do in order to make beer, okay? Of course, actually, it's a distillation, I guess, a grain of some sort. So, nobody questions that. You don't really have to have a mashgiach over the beer, although I understand that Coors beer is now carrying an OU on it, okay? Nope, a gun's fine.
You can only drink Coors beer. Better
drinking Coors beer than something else. But of course, that's always been the all right. Now, with brandies, we insist, yeah, all right. Now let's take something else, all right? Let's take schnapps. Let's say
peppery,
rye. Well, correct. I mean, I'm not using it. I'm using it in the old fashioned, in the sense, like rye, scotch.
Oh,
okay, this is what I mean. Okay. With rye and scotch, does it need hashgacha or does it not need hashgacha? Until now, nobody has questioned the fact that rye and scotch do not need hashgacha. But lately, the story has been going around that they adulterated it a little bit.
Who starts these stories?
That's a good question. Who starts it? I don't know.
Also, can they be hummus?
That's already a different
problem.
They are hummus.
Could
it be hummus
Shechalav
HaPesach,
the
Jewish owner of the company?
Well, now I'll tell you the truth. You're really being, very, very, very careful.
Isn't there a Jewish company in Canada that makes
a lot of the stuff? Sure. Seagram's. Jewish owned, absolutely. This is Jewish owned.
Yes.
Still, nobody applies the business of, Chumash of our love, HaPesach, the secrets. I'll tell you why.
Excuse me, doctor, but you can't lock up because people working in the kitchen. I'll come back later.
Okay, anyway, the rabbi is supposed to be here for a class at 8 o'clock tonight.
Well,
I'll be finished, but the rabbi will be coming in.
He's going to be there until 10 o'clock. I'll come back and make sure.
Okay, fine.
I don't understand. What's this phrase that you're quoting about Pesach?
Chometz she'ovar alov ha-Pesach. That means that if a Jew owned chometz, right?
Pesach, yeah.
Which he didn't sell for Pesach, you understand? He never sold it. So in other words, this chometz still belonged to him during Pesach. So the law is that you're not allowed to use that chometz after Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we mean by Chomesh Avodah HaPesach, okay? So,
You can't ever use it again?
This is, as we say, a knas. What is a knas? A knas is a penalty that was imposed in order to make sure that people would be very careful about, this. In other words, technically we could say that according to the din of the Torah, when Pesach is over, you're permitted again to eat donuts, right? But in order to make sure that people wouldn't take the laws of Pesach, lightly, okay? So therefore, Chachamim came and they made a knas, a penalty for anybody who violates this, and this is the basis of Chomesh Ofer Halov HaPesach, right? That it's also bad, no, you're not allowed to have any benefit whatever from it. You're not allowed to eat it, you couldn't sell it, for example, and make a profit with it or anything like that. That would be prohibited, okay? This is the reason why we want people to sell their chometz prior to Pesach, okay? Now that would apply, in other words, to, let's say, groceries, would apply to liquor stores and things like that and so on. However, bear in mind something else. Bear in mind, first of all, that if it's a goy who now is the possessor of it, then the law doesn't apply to him anymore, because the chometz of a goy is permitted unto the goy during Pesach and is permitted to a Jew even after Pesach. You understand? So that law doesn't apply. This is why, for example, we have bakeries, okay, which are goyish owned. So even though they bake during Pesach, naturally we're not allowed to eat that, okay? But what happens right after Pesach? We can start into use of, you know, the stuff that they have made even possibly during Pesach itself. Right. Wouldn't recommend it, but I mean, nevertheless, technically it is permissible, you see. Because it's the comments of a goy, right. Now, the average liquor store owner already has that stuff, you understand? So that, therefore, if you buy his liquor after Pesach, in reality, you're not being guilty of violating the law.
Right.
Correct. Exactly. So that this is why, you know, we're not that medoctic.
You started to say about rye and
all right. Scotch. Yeah, what I started to say about rye and scotch is that until recently nobody questioned as to whether you could do it. Now, you know, they investigate to see whether by some chance any grape alcohol, I'm not saying grape wine, but grape alcohol has been used in the manufacture of this particular liquor.
Some scotches boast that they're aged in wine casks, for instance.
Yeah.
So that would bring up a problem.
Yeah.
I doubt it very much.
Well, if the wine cask itself were a new wine cask, it wouldn't make any difference. It may simply be that the word wine and wine cask only describes a certain type of cask. Okay?
I'm trying to give you. There also was a rumor when I was a kid that Guinness used to have pig thrown in the vat.
I doubt if it's true.
I doubt it's true, but that's why Guinness is so good.
I think the OU started that rumor.
No, they have the OU in Ireland. They still
I'm talking about this.
No, I understand, right. But, all right, now you ask me a different question about Mabushal. Okay, wine, Yayin Mabushal, as we say. This already is a different question. But the Yayin Mabushal, the question was always, okay, let's go back.
First of all, I buy a bottle of Kedem champagne that says Yayin Mevushal.
Correct. Practically all of those bottles are going to carry the word Yayin Mevushal on. All right, let me explain why, okay? According to the law that we find in Gemara Veda Zora, okay, a person who is, let's say, a goy, okay? If he pours your wine, so automatically that is considered Yayin Nesser. Or, since we have Yayin Nesser, the pagans used to pour wine on the altar as a libation. Just as Lahabdil, we also had Nesser. We also poured wine on our mizbeah during the time that we had sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. We did the same thing, okay? So, since they used wine as a libation, you know, to their Avodah Zorah, therefore the rabbis came and they prohibited a goy from touching wine that a Jew is to drink, because of the fact that a Jew might be drinking wine that had also been used for this libation. This is why we call Yei Nesach. Since the goyim in general do not use wine today to pour to Avodah Zorah, so we still, however...
They use it for sacraments.
Yeah, right, that they do. But the question is, do we consider them as being of the Avodah Zorah? Are they idolaters? Technically, we say that the Christian is not an idolater. We say that the Muslim is not an idolater. Why do we say that?
The descendants of Judaism.
Exactly. They are religions which are based on Judaism. They will all admit that to some part or other, you know, to some extent or other, they are, let's say, a continuation of Judaism, right? And they claim that, first of all, the Muslims definitely claim that they only believe in the one God. They don't pray to any statues or anything like that. In Christianity, it's a more difficult problem from this point of view, but we take the attitude, like, for example, as the Rambam would take it. The Rambam took it in the sense, you know, that even though, you know, they may be doing these things, but in reality, their kavona is what? To serve God. Okay? So that, therefore, we've taken them out of the category of being idolaters. Okay? But nevertheless, we still retain the iser, you know, the prohibition against their wine. So what do we call it? We call it now yain stam. Yain stam. What's stam? Stam means, in other words, ordinary wine that you buy in the, in your corner package store or something like that, made by goyim. This is why we can't use gallo wine, or we can't use any of the other, you know, non-supervised wines that are made specifically for us. Okay? All right. Now, inasmuch as we have this prohibition against our drinking any wine that a goy is handled, okay, so the Gemara in Avodah Zorah says that wine which has been boiled, this is what we mean by the word mevushal, mevushal is boiled, okay, wine which has been boiled, this wine is permitted to a Jew even if a goy has touched it. Why? Because no goy ever took boiled wine and used it as a libation. They didn't do it. When they wanted to pour a libation, they took real wine, not wine that had already been cooked before. You understand? All right. So that, therefore, since the prohibition does not extend to wine which has been cooked, this is why today most of the wines that we drink have been mevushal. In other words, they've been first of all pasteurized, and the only question is as to what degree do we consider mevushal. Some say that mevushal means taka, that you have to heat it up to 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Others say, no, it's enough, you do it 160 degrees, 180 degrees Fahrenheit. Why? Because you try to put your hand even 160 degrees and see what happens. This is, as we would say, hayad soledes. Your hand recoils, gets burned, you know, by doing it.
Right.
So, all right, let me just... All right, so that, therefore, this is why we say that if we take this wine and we boil it, no matter to what degree it is, as I said, 160 would be the minimum, okay? Then from that point on, even if a goy pours this wine, if a goy touches this wine, it doesn't mean anything to us. We could still permit it... This is why they take this wine, and it's for them economically, and for us also from the point of view that we don't have a problem if we have goyish waiters and things like that, or even mechalalei Shabbos before, because there are those who would say that the mechalal Shabbos falls into the same category. In other words, if mechalal Shabbos would pour the wine, then we wouldn't be permitted. If it's yain mevushal, it's no problem.
So somebody doesn't keep the Shabbos and pours wine for you, you're not allowed to drink it.
Correct. But if it's mevushal, it doesn't bother us.
What if you make the wine yourself?
You make the wine yourself, then obviously it's not mevushal unless you're going to cook it.
Well, do you have to cook it then?
No.
Are you going to have goyim?
If you're going to serve it only to if you're going to serve it only to yourself, it's no problem.
No problem.
Or, like, for example, in Eretz Yisrael, when I go to Yerushalayim, I love some of the wines that, for example, my son-in-law buys over there. Brands that we never heard of. I mean, they're made for, you know, in Yerushalayim, so served locally over there. Exactly. The people who buy it are all of them. I mean, people who make it a Shomer Shabbos, the people who buy it a Shomer Shabbos, so that they don't have that problem. So you can have this wine and it's yummy, yummy. Take my word for it. I love it. But, you know, that wine will never be bottled and sent to the United States. Never will. No. No.
No.
Because whether it's Mevushal or not, we say Bori Pri Hagafen. Okay? The question was raised when grape juice became popular. Should it be considered just an ordinary drink, and therefore you would make shahakal, in which case it wouldn't make any difference whether it's made under supervision. In other words, Welch's would also be permissible, right? Or do we say, no. If it's made out of grapes, then it falls into the category of Bori Pri Hagafen, even if it's
not fermented.
Right, even if it's not fermented. So of course we paskin today, there's no question how we paskin. We paskin that you're permitted to make Bori Pri Hagafen over it because it's considered another form of wine, even if it has been, you know, even though it has not been fermented.
But it's not Mevushal.
Matter of fact, they do have Mevushal. Yeah, that's all pasteurized. So you buy Kenham grape juice.
I don't know, I've looked at the bottle.
Yeah, Kenham grape juice is made in the bushel. There's no question about that. I mean, they do pasteurization also for health reasons, for nothing else, you know, to kill any germs that may be in there.
And the what happens now is that we can't buy grape jelly because of this distance of that grape wine.
Correct, exactly. This is why, with grape jelly, again, we don't permit the use of grape jelly unless it was made by Shomer Shabbos, which Polanis is not. And this is why, for example, on Polanis you have to take a look. Grape jelly does not have any hefsher, nor do some of the other things that contain grape juice in it.
There is no grape jelly then.
Well, there may be brands in New York that are made specially, like, for example, maybe Hadar, or Itzkowitz, or somebody or other. You understand what I mean? The seasons, baby.
I've seen Polana products which have a new of it. It's grape jam as opposed to grape jam.
Correct. Because the grape jam is made with an artificial grape flavor. That's the reason.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
They don't make Hagafen on the jelly.
No.
And yet it's still considered wine enough that it could be a problem for the guy to.
No, but you have to bear in mind, you also have to consider what is its use. You're not drinking it as wine, you understand? You're only using it to smear it on bread or matzah, whatever it is that you're smearing it on. So in that case, it's already, it's a different thing.
But let's say someone really enjoys eating plain grape jelly, a spoonful of it.
Right.
What broth should he make?
I would say in this case, he should make probably shahakol. Others might say bori pri hagafen. In other words, it's a form of grape, but it's not fermented, so it's not really hagafen. Or in pre-awaits, okay, that we can see. You know, that goes back to a question that we discussed last week, also, with cereals. Is it Zayna or what? What are cornflakes? What bracha should you make? Should it be Shahakal, or should it be Mezoinis?
Or what if it's or a no Adama or
Pri Adama?
No, Bor Pri. Okay. Or what about what? Is it considered? It's a wheat product.
Let's go to shredded wheat. Shredded wheat would be bizarre if it was.
Shredded wheat is bizarre. There's no question about
that. But if you put milk in
because of
it. If you milk
but if the milk over there is not drowning it out, then still. Remember what I said last week about the ikar and the tophel. That if you make the bracha over the more important of the two, then automatically you're excused from having to make a bracha over the less important. Okay.
Right.
Why Adama? I don't understand that. Why Adama?
It's corn. It's like you're not wheat. Eating corn. That's the point. It has been taken out of the form that you don't recognize the corn anymore. So right, and it has been instead transformed into a form of mezoinos. So that brings us to another problem.
Telling you, we can't even get started yet. But still, it's important for us to get some general concepts beforehand, okay?
Sure.
You have the following problem. Mezoinos, as we'll discover later on in the study in the Gemara, can apply to, in general, food which is prepared out of, first of all, what we call the five principal grains, you know, wheat, rye, oats, spelt, barley, okay? Those are the five principal ones, okay? Plus corn and rice, okay? Because they also form, you know, you could make bread or cakes or something out of them, you know, which form mezoinos, in the sense, you know, that it is food already, substantial food. That's what I mean in this particular case by mezoinos, okay? So that therefore we make the bracha b'armin mezoinos for it, okay? But what bracha do you make afterwards? This already is a different problem. So for the brachas afterwards, we have, as you know, besides the Birkas HaMazon, we also have two other brachas that we recite. One of them is what we call the Bracha Me'en Sholesh, which means the shortened version of the Birkas HaMazon that we recite after eating these principal grains that I mentioned, or also after wine, or after grapes, or after figs, pomegranates, okay? In other words, fruits, yeah, there's one over there. These fruits that Eretz Yisrael is considered blessed with, okay? So for that, we have to make that bracha. The one that begins, and we have different versions. In one, you know, we say, Ala Nichiv Yala Kalkola, okay? This would be for things that are made out of wheat, rye, etc., etc. Okay? Another version of that same bracha is al hagefen, al pri hagefen. Right? This is after drinking wine or grape juice, right? Or another version of the same bracha is we say the words instead, al hoetz vi al pri hoetz. This is after eating one of these special fruits that we say Eretz Yisrael is
talking about al amich.
Yeah, right, that bracha. Well, al nichya is, as I said, it's for grains. Okay?
Cake.
Of the five principal ones, right. Could be cake, okay? But it could also apply to cereal. In other words, you ask me, what about shredded wheat? So the correct bracha to make before shredded wheat, as we said, has been so nice, and the correct bracha to make afterwards would be al nichya al kalkola.
Ah.
Okay? That would be the correct bracha.
Not as helpful as any.
Right, not very nefoshes, right, okay? Now, what is the correct bracha to make, for example, if you eat a rice cake, or if you have puffed rice or something like that?
Rice
in that case, Rice Krispies, etc., exactly. Or cornflakes, corn cakes, you name it, okay?
Yeah,
then in that particular case, they're not corn chips, that's a really different problem. Corn kicks, okay. Right. Because we've made the bracha mezoinos before, right? We made the bracha very many mezoinos before, but it's wrong to say ala michi al kalkola, because it's not one of the special grains, you know, that Eretz Israel is praised with in the Torah, okay? So what bracha do we make instead? Very nefoshes, exactly. That's the bracha that we make.
You really
after
have to look at the box in order to.
Yeah, right. You certainly do. If anything, I've learned
rice
in supervising kashrus. Boy, do you have to look at ingredients.
Where
don't
they in the box? They should open.
Yeah.
So we're talking about wheat, oats, barley,
spelt, and rye. What spelt is? It's some sort of a
rye. How about rice? Is not included.
Rice, you say mezoinos before, but it is not included in the the praise of Eretz Israel, right? That we find in Pasha Eik.
And what is the other one besides rice?
Corn.
So
corn is also. Rye. I mean, it's a form of mezoinos in the sense, you know, I'm not talking about sweet corn. You know, that we eat. That, of course, would be very pre-hadoma. But I'm talking of corn in the form of corn cakes, corn cakes, corn muffins, and things like that. Exactly. Okay?
What is the
you say mizonot beforehand, right, but you say burn the fushes, you say, after that. Yeah.
What about those face of the cake, the potato?
Okay, you asked a very good question. The answer is, if you can be satisfied with that, I can never. It crumbles in your mouth and your hands and so on and so forth. So for that, there's no question. You say shahakol beforehand, you say bird the foshes afterwards.
But it was mainly potatoes, you said they were prepared almost.
For what?
No, the form has changed.
Now when the form is changed radically, like for example, let's say taco, you know, these taco chips or something like that, or potato chips or something like that. For these, you already say shahako, because you no longer recognize it as being either corn or potatoes or whatever it may be.
French fries,
it's recognizable as a potato, so that should be Bori Pri Va'Adoma. Correct.
So what is the basic difference between, you say you use a grain to make cake, right? You use grain to make bread.
Yeah.
How different is it? What's the difference between the two?
That is a different problem. The problem is then, and what
they're
else has
rise,
been added?
They both use yeast. They use
correct. Problem is what else has been added in order to make what it is. Okay.
Cakes,
bread.
Sugar, I mean.
Okay,
eggs,
bread.
Sugar.
We know what goes in, but what if you start in to add honey and fruit juices and stuff like that? You understand? So that takes it already out of the category of being just plain bread,
so,
and it becomes bizarre. This is the question about egg matzah. Yeah.
If you put raisins into challah, the Russian
yeah.
challah, then that could become some idea.
No, because they're only adding a few raisins to what is basically
the
challah.
Ingredient.
Okay? But I'm talking, for example, let's say about egg matzah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Besides the fact that there's another prohibition for it, namely that Pesach, we must eat regular matzah. Why do we have to eat regular matzah? Because it's written over there, lechem oni, the bread of affliction or the bread of poverty, okay? So ordinary matzah fits that description beautifully, okay? But if you have already what we call matzah shira, in other words, enriched, rich matzah, I mean, you have eggs in there, you have fruit juices in there and things like that. This is no longer plain ordinary matzah. Okay. So that is prohibited on Pesach. But now the question is, all right, let's say it's not Pesach. Let's say it's the rest of the year. What bracha do we make over egg matzah? Do we make mezonos or do we make hamotzi? What do we do?
Well, this is a main ingredient is still flour and so
right,
on.
Right, right. But
bread.
Because of that uncertainty, that's why many people say, if you only eat a small amount, then in that case, consider it as mezonos. Because it's more like a cake in that particular case. But if you're going to eat at least a whole one, and that's going to be the main staple of bread, you know, as far as you're concerned,
you
for your meal.
Bread, yeah.
And in that case, we should make hamotzi for it.
It
is. It is. I know. You have to read the fine print in the Hebrew. I wish that they would put it in English. But they don't.
They always buy one back to make money.
Yeah.
Well, there are people
who are okay. According, exactly. Right. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that matzah shira can be eaten only by children or by sick or elderly people who cannot eat regular matzah.
Can't chew it or something.
Yeah. Right.
You brought up about mashed potatoes.
Yes.
If you boil a potato, it's still recognizable as a potato.
Correct.
But if you mash it.
But it's still essentially
it's still
a potato.
It's
the answer.
Potato.
Still essentially.
So mashed potato is also a donut.
Yeah. Right.
But how about applesauce?
Applesauce?
Also.
I say Bori Pri Hawaii's work.
Yeah.
Sure I do. it's essentially it's apple. I mean, so what if you ground it down, but still it's an apple. Yeah.
Nope.
Okay, so
long again, Mike.
Wow. Wow. For what? I said Bori Pri Hawaii's. Okay, the Alperis Haoretz, right, fruit grows on the ground, Bori Pri Ha'adomah, right? He says, except for bread. which even though essentially it comes from the ground in the form of the grain that has to be milled and everything else and so on, but again, because of the chashivas, the importance which is placed upon the role of bread in the Torah, in our Tanakh and so on, you know, with the Torah refers to it, for example, mate lechem, you know, the staff of bread. It's like the staff of life, you know, the English expression. So for that reason, we say the bracha hamotzi lechem haaretz. Okay, and then v'alaha yirakos, and how about for vegetables? So hu amer bori pri adama. For this again, achachonim say you make the same bracha bori pri adama. So guns fine, but Rabbi Yehuda omer bori minu d'shem. Rabbi Yehuda insisted that we should make a fine distinction between what grows in the ground, okay, from the ground. As Rashi explains, he divides it into three different types, okay? Type number one would be fruit which grows on the ground, like for example, melons, tomatoes, squash, cucumbers and things like that. No question, they're fruits, okay? Type number two would be where the leaves are what we eat. For example, lettuce, cabbage,
spinach,
right? Okay. But then you have others which are in the form of seeds. Seeds. Yeah. Last, for example, he says kidneys. In other words, peas, beans, and things like that.
That's true.
Okay. Peanuts would form the same category too, by the way. Because, you know, they're some say they are real kidneys, others say they're like kidneys, okay?
What profit is he for the sake of that?
He would make a distinction between all of them, okay? He would say, if it's really fruit, then in that case, what do you say? Bore pri ha'adama, right? That he agrees. But if it is in the latter category, in other words, like peas and stuff like that, so he would consider that bori mini dishoyim.
Oh, dishoyim.
Dishoyim, right. Literally grasses and so on.
Dishoyim means grasses?
Right, right.
Okay.
All right.
But the halacha is not following
him. No, the halacha doesn't follow Rabbi Yehuda. Halacha follows what the Chacham say. I mean, in other words, anything growing from the ground, we say bori pri adama. Got it. Later on, we'll learn another Mishnah which says, and what happens if you don't know when you make a mistake? If, for example, you ate a piece of melon and you said bori pri haaretz, are you yotzi with that? No, of course not. Because the melon doesn't grow on a tree. What if, on the other hand, okay, you ate an apple and you said bori pri haadama? Are you yotzi with that or not?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Why?
Because the tree grew from the ground and the apple grew on the tree, but essentially it has its source in the ground. That's why.
Okay.
So even the tree is a product of the ground. That's why you're yotzei by saying bori pri ha'adama. Hopefully you should say bori pri ha'aretz, but if you make a mistake, bori pri ha'adama, you're still yotzei. You don't have to repeat the problem.
But they all come from the ground.
Seaweed?
No, I'm talking about...
Don't you ever eat seaweed?
No.
We do it today, but...
I'm talking about what the products that he mentioned. Though, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I don't see the distinction there then. For that, that reasoning.
Can a melon ever grow on a tree?
No, it can't. But
no,
if you say
a cucumber, can it ever grow on a tree?
Okay, I agree. But but why you would say with a when you eat an apple and you say bori pri adama? I don't see that
because the tree itself grew from the ground, so that this is only a continuation of the growth of the tree.
So then to be safe, you'd say bori pri adama every time.
If you're stuck and you don't know what bracha to make for any type of a fruit or a vegetable, something. Exactly, that's what you say.
Okay.
Although we'll discover that the Gemara has a couple of exceptions. Not over here, but in a later chapter, they come with a couple of more exceptions.
We'll save those
exceptions for later.
The cheap seats are talking about mushrooms.
Ah, since you mentioned it.
Uh-oh.
Right. Okay, the Gemara paskens that mushrooms do not grow from the ground. You know what? All of a sudden, out of some whatever, it doesn't have roots in the ground. That's the point. It doesn't have roots in the ground. the mushroom. So that therefore it says that the bracha that you make for that is shahakol miyadim for it. Okay? That's the bracha for a mushroom. With cabbage, in the time of the Gemara, it says that if you would eat the cabbage raw, then you have to make the bracha also shakal b'yibin borei. Why? Because people do not normally eat raw cabbage. What do? They boil it. So for boiled cabbage, they say you have to say borei pri ha'adama, and for raw cabbage, they paskin that you have to say shahakol niyadin borei.
Oh, but
today we don't accept it because we are in the habit of more of eating, raw cabbage. But
if you live in months, you don't eat cabbage at all because you're afraid there might be a worm in it.
Well, that's a
different
story.
There might be.
But you do the same thing with lettuce. You know how many hours my son-in-law spends Erev Pesach examining the romaine lettuce. Oy gevalt, it's a production, an 8-hour production. Just to make sure that it's examined thoroughly so that, you know,
it
shouldn't
touch the
shell.
In America or in Israel?
In Israel.
Yeah.
Nope. In America,
the problem does not seem to be as severe. But nevertheless, I mean, if you're careful, you're careful. In Borough Park, they're extra careful, okay?
No, Muncie, they're eliminated. They don't eat it.
Muncie and so whatever they do.
They don't eat it. And also, they don't eat broccoli either for that reason.
Correct.
What's in the broccoli?
They're afraid there might be a worm.
They're making sure that there should be any tiny bugs or worms inside of it. We are prohibited from eating bugs or worms.
Well, no, then you have to say for a shakal name before if you ate a worm.
Not for a bug and not for a worm. It's an iser.
It's
prohibited.
It's prohibited.
Crave. Not allowed to eat it, okay?
All right. Let's go on.
All right. Minahani Mili, says the Gemara. Gemara wants to know, where do we find a source in the Torah that we are required to recite brachas, period. Brachas for foods. Okay, that's what it wants to know. So, they start in to look, where is there a pasuk that might justify this? So they find a verse. The verse says, the Tanu Rabbanan, as our sages have taught, they take the verse Kodesh Hilulim LaHashem. The pasuk says it is holy and it is to be a source of praises unto God. Now what are they talking about? So as I said last week when we towards the end of the lesson, the end of the shir, it was about plants in the fruits in the fourth year, what we call Neter Revive. Okay? Mm-hmm. We said that a tree, according to the law of the Torah, the first 3 years that fruits are being produced, they are arelim, in other words, they are considered uncircumcised, and therefore you are not allowed to use them. And then it says, Vashono horavis, right? And in the fourth year, it says, Yekol piyo kodesh hilulim Hashem. All its fruits shall be considered holy, a source of praise unto God. Okay? And so from this, and then it says Vashanah Hamishis, and in the fifth year, then you're permitted, you know, to eat all this and you don't have to worry. But what was done with the fruit of the fourth year in Eretz Israel? It had to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. And if you live too far from the Beis HaMikdash so that the fruits would spoil before it got them there.
Money.
Right. Then you had to have what we call pidyon. In other words, you redeem them for money, and then you had to take this money with you to the Beis HaMikdash, and in Yerushalayim, right? And you spent it on food that you bought over there, and you ate it in Yerushalayim itself. It's similar to the law of Maisa Sheni in that respect,
tithe.
Yeah.
Anyone who bought the fruit could use it. If you wanted to take your fruit to Yerushalayim, but you couldn't do fast, you sold your fruit to me, I could eat it.
Absolutely. Because this now, we say, is mechulal. It's now, or yotze lechulin. It has now become secular in its nature. It's no longer kodesh, but it's chulin.
What I pay for it is kodesh.
Yeah, the money is kodesh, okay? And that has to be spent in Yerushalayim, as we say. That's the... But...
Can it be done today?
We don't do it.
Maaser
Sheni, yes. That we do take something. Symbolically, we take it. We don't really take 10% of Maaser Sheni either, you know. but we are mechalel, as we say. Mechalel means that you make it chulin, you make it, you know, permitted for use. It's no longer in the category of Kodesh by redeeming it symbolically. Okay? So this is what we do. In Eretz Yisrael, it's a very important thing. I mean,
what do they do in Eretz Yisrael?
They take Maaser Sheni, they take Maaser Rishon, they take Truma, they take Truma and Maaseres. But it's all done symbolically, right? I mean, let's say you take a coin or something like that, or you take a little piece and you say, whatever is in the north is for this, whatever is in the south is for this. This represents Truma, this represents Maaser, and so on and so forth, okay? And once you've done that, then the rest of the fruit becomes permitted. Yeah. Well, as I say, we're mechalel. After all, you can't bring into the Beis Hamikdash. That doesn't exist. People don't go to Yerushalayim and eat it over there specifically, because if the Beis Hamikdash is not in existence, then that law is also inoperative. You understand? Mm-hmm. So symbolically, this is what I say, they are mechalel. Mechalel means, as I say, you make it into chulin. You make it in, you know, you take it out of its state of sanctity and you make it permitted, you know, for profane use, for ordinary use, okay, by a, you know, by symbolically setting aside a certain amount or a coin or whatever it may be, and that's it, you know. Then there's a whole ceremony. You take a look in Sidurim that are published in Eretz Yisrael for the Eretz Yisrael populace. Those over there, I mean, they give you instructions as to what
do you do with the coin? Give it to charity?
Yeah. Okay. Either give it to charity or else people will throw it into the Yam HaMelech. This is actually what's supposed to be done.
Really?
You throw it in, right, in other words, you destroy it. So you throw it into the Yam HaMelech. If you're not near the Yam HaMelech, you can try any other body of water. I guess eventually it sinks.
Well, you're going to throw in a check anyway.
Okay. We're getting.
But you know, living in Eretz Yisrael really has certain complications that you don't have in the Chutz La'aretz, no question about it. On the other hand, how can we compare Jewish life here as compared to Eretz Yisrael over there, where everybody in the street is a Jew, hopefully.
Not necessarily.
Oh, well, we know. There are a few going over there. Reminds me of the story, and then I'll continue over here. A person once came to visit the Rav in Berlin at that time. So the Rav was boasting how large a Jewish population he has. He says, tell me, how many goyim do you have? So he tells him, we have in Berlin, we have, let's say, 4 million goyim. So he says, tell me, why do you need so many Shabbos goyim? Those were the good days. When
the good day before Hitler. Right,
yeah, before. Okay, so, as I said, the Pasuk says, Kodesh Hedulim L'Hashem. All right? Now, what do our sages do with this? They say, Melamed, it says that this verse teaches us, Shetu'unim Bracha Lifneim Achreihem. It says this. The fact that it says that hilulim, as I say, this is a plural, right? Hilul would be the noun from the word, you know, the verb, the halel, to give praise, okay? So hilul means reciting praise in this case, but the fact that it is in the plural implies what, say our sages? That you praise God beforehand, with nehem, well, achrayim, and also you may. You recite praise to God for the food that you've eaten after you've eaten it. Okay. So God's fine. So Mikan Omer Rabbi Akiva, so based upon this teaching of the rabbis, how they apply this verse, so Rabbi Akiva said, also the Yodom, it is prohibited for any man, Sheyitom Klum, that he should taste anything. That is, in other words, don't taste any food, don't eat any food, whatever, Kodim Sheyavore, before you recite a blessing for it. No matter how small the amount of the food may be, okay, but don't eat it unless you make a bracha before. Why? Obviously, because we want to show the Ribbono Shel Olam how much we appreciate his gifts to us, the food that we eat and the other things that we enjoy. So when it comes to food, let us not eat anything without making a bracha. Okay. Guns. Guns fine. But now, the question is, how do we know that this is what it really means? So this is the question of Gemara. It says, why do you say that Kodesh Elulim comes in order to teach us that we have to make a bracha beforehand and a bracha afterwards? Is this the reason why the Torah brings that pasuk? Haynu goyle. On the contrary, it says we have a different reason why this particular pasuk is necessary. Chad, number one, the Omer Rachmono, that the Torah said achale. First you have to make it chulin. Remember, what are we talking about? We're talking about fruits of the fourth year. This is its source, right, to begin with, right? The fruit of the fourth year. Now, what must we do with this fruit if we cannot take it to Yerushalayim? We said achale. You have to make it chulin, right? In other words, you redeem it for money, and then the hodor, and afterwards then achale, right? Then you can eat it. So this is lesson number one, according to them, that we learned from this pasuk. Okay, that first you have to make it chulin, and then you're permitted to eat from it. Okay, the idoch, and the other lesson that they learn is Dover Haton Shira Taun Khilu, that something which requires that it be accompanied by the song. What song? The answer is the song of the Levim, the Beis Hamikdash. So that is Taun Khilu. That type of fruit requires that it be turned into chulin. In other words, that it be redeemed and made chulin. V'she'eino ton shira, but any kind of a fruit which does not require that the Levites sing song over it in the Beis HaMikdash, ein ton chulin, that does not require that it be made, you know, no longer holy, but be turned into chulin. Okay? Now, what kind of fruit requires that the Levites should sing song over it? The answer is only wine. That's all. Only wine. Mm-hmm. Because when did the Levim sing songs in the Beis HaMikdash? It's connection with the sacrifices. You understand? And at what particular point in the sacrificial system did the Levites burst forth into song? It wasn't during the time that they slaughtered the ox or the goat or the kid or whatever it may be. In other words, the korban. They didn't sing at that particular time, as a normal rule, okay? But instead, when did they sing their psalm? They sang their psalm as the wine was being poured on the Mizbeach following the taking of the blood of the animal and the sprinkling upon the altar, okay? This was part of the order in which it went. So that, therefore, what does it mean there? And this latter interpretation would represent what? That only grapes, wine, right, are subject to this law, correct? So, other fruits, according to this point of view, would not be in the category of hilulim. You understand? Because they do not require hallel. They do not require the songs of praise on the part of the Levites. Okay? Uchdar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, and this is in accordance with the view of Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Omer Rav Yonason, who said the name Rav Yonason, the Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Omer Rav Yonason. And what did they say? They said, Minayan, how do we know? She'ein Omrim Shira El Hayayin. How do we know that the song of the Levites is sung only over wine? Shenemar, and we have a pasuk again for this. What is the pasuk? This goes back to a very interesting moshel, as we say, a parable that we find in the book of Shoftim. in the book of Judges. There it is written that there was a guy by the name of Avimelech. He was a real Patskunyak, and he wanted to make himself king. Now remember, in the days of the judges, there were no kings. But he decided he wanted to make himself king. So he got control of the city of Shechem, and he killed all the descendants of Gidon, but one little descendant managed to escape, and his name was Yosam. This Yosam said to the people of Shechem, so what did the people of Shechem do then? They said, okay, Avimelech, you're our king, okay? So he gave him a marshal. He says that all the trees had a meeting, okay? And each one was asked, would you be the king over us? And of course the cedar tree gave his answer, why should I do it? I'm so beautiful and I give shade, etc., etc. And what was the response of the grapevine? This is what we have over here. The grapevine said, Vatomelahem Agefen, right? And the grapevine said unto the others, Echadalti is Tiroshi, shall I cease giving my wine? Tirosh is another way of, a society synonym for wine. This is why, what do we say in the second paragraph of the Shema? Yosafta de Gonecho, Tirosh Chav Yitzarecha. In other words, you will gather in the Gonecho, your grain, from which, of course, you make your bread, Tiroshko, your wine, the Yitzarecha. What is Yitzarecha? Olive oil. Right, exactly. Okay? These were the three staple foods. Okay? So, shall I cease giving, my wine, Hamesameach Elohim Va'anoshim, which makes joyous both God and men. So it says, Im Anoshim Mesameach, okay, granted that wine will make people happy, but Elohim Ba'mem Mesameach, how does it make the Rebbeinu Shel Olam happy? So, Mekan She'ein Omrim Shira Elayayin. So the answer is, from here we learn that the songs of the Levites were sung only in connection with wine. In other words, for this is how God is made happy, literally. Okay? It's made happy by the songs of praise that we sing as we pour the wine libation upon the Mizbeah. Okay. So now, what have we seen? We have two conflicting views already, as you see, right? Each one has a different interpretation of what is Kodesh Hiduliyim L'Hashem mean, right? Does it mean, as the first interpretation, that the word Hiluliyim implies that you have to make a bracha beforehand and a bracha after it, right? Or is this only a reference to the wine? And in that case, this is what we call the Kerem Revive. Remember I said last week that we have such a thing as Nata Revai, in other words, plants, fruits that grow in the fourth year, as compared to Kerem Revai, which means literally the vineyard of the fourth year. And that would apply, in other words, to only what? The grapes. Okay? Alright, so that this is where the argument stands right now. Now, obviously, if you say that it's the latter interpretation, we haven't learned what?
How do you make a bracha?
Right.
Yeah.
You haven't learned
what constitutes a bracha?
Right. What constitutes? For what reason are we making brachas, right?
No one said that.
So it says, Haniach Laman de Omar, Haniach Laman de Tonik. Fine. According to the interpretation, which would be actually the first interpretation that we had, namely Neta Revai. So from this we can learn that Kodesh Hilulim Lashem means, okay, fine, you make a bracha beforehand, you make a bracha afterwards, and that shows us that this is Hilulim. And this would account for the fact that the word praise is written in the plural. El Alaman Tuni Kerem Revai. But if we go according to the point of view of the one who says that we're applying this pasuk Kodesh Hilulim Hashem only in reference to the fruit of the vineyard, right? So Ma'ikol Amemor. So what are you going to say? The Itmar, as we have learned someplace else, like the, you know, Beraisa, it says Rabbi Chiya v'Rab Shimon, v'Rab Shimon b'Rabbi. It says there are two authorities. One is Rab Chiya and the other one is Rab Shimon, the son of Rabbi. It says Chad Toni Kerem Rabbi. Says one authority taught what? Kerem Rabbi, the vineyard of the fourth year. The Chad Toni Neta Rabbi. The other one taught the fruits of the fourth year. So Ulaman the Toni Kerem Rabbi. So how can we go according to the point of view of the one who says Kerem Ravai, who says only the vineyard of the fourth year? So O Yalav Gezerah Shava. So he says E Yalav Gezerah Shava. My eyes are getting a little bit pimply over there. Says if he learns it by Gezerah Shava, then the Tanya, as we have learned, Rabbi Yomer Neeman Kan Lahoisif Lachem Tuvuwasei, Malahalan Uswas Hakorem, so Malahalan Kerem Avkan Kerem. Okay? So this brings us into another kettle. Fish, okay? You have to understand, what did we mean by a Gezeira Shava? What is a Gezeira Shava? Gezeira is the creep, but what is a Gezeira Shava? That's a different story. That's a technical term that we use in the Talmud, okay? Gezeira Shava means that you have to... Yes, go ahead, David.
No, I
remember
that Gezeira Shava is you have a creep which involves certain language.
Yeah. Okay, that's not really quite the nature of Gezeira Shava. I think that what you're thinking of is what we call a binyan av. What is a binyan av? Literally a principal binyan, principal building, right? That is that, you know, wherever you find this particular, once you've established this major category, then wherever you find examples, you'll see you can apply this as a binyan av.
Gezeira Shava is mentioned in Rabbi Yishmael, right?
Sure, they're all there, absolutely. They're all there. They're all there. All these things I would mention. Gezeira Shava is specifically, you have two psukim, and they each share a word in common. Therefore, what do we say? We say that what applies to verse 1 also applies equally to verse 2 because of this commonality of language that they have. However, I have to caution you, you cannot decide for yourself what is a Gezeira Shava. Understand? If I would say that this pasuk has the word es, another pasuk has the word es in it, that doesn't make it a Gezeira Shava. According to our sages, a Gezeira Shava, there has to be a tradition that you have that these two verses share this Gezeira Shava together. Okay? Alright, so let's take a look at this Gezeira Shava that we have over here, according to him. Okay? Verse number 1. Okay? It says, okay, Lahosif Lochem Tivuasal. This we find in connection with the, you know, the fruit of the fourth year. Okay? That in other words, if you follow this principle that you don't eat it the first 3 years, right? And in the fourth year you bring it, you know, you eat it as Kodesh Elulim Hashem, then what will be? Then in the fifth year, in other words, beginning from that point on, God will add, Lahosif Lahim to us, God will add his produce unto you. In other words, you'll be rewarded by having more and more produce. This will be the reward. Right, a better yield, exactly. So the word over there is Tabuasal. Then the Ne'emah Lahalon, and furthermore, it's written, and this happens to be written in connection with a different thing altogether. It's written in connection with Kilayim. What do we mean by Kilayim?
What's Kilayim? What is Kilayim?
Kilayim is a mixture.
A prohibited mixture, okay? Kilayim is a prohibited mixture. For example, the first example, there are different examples given in the Torah. One of them is, for example, that you're not allowed to plant indiscriminately two different types of grains or something like that. Okay, right. Or a fruit and a grain or something. You have to separate them. There should be a definite distinction between one or the other. Okay? But not to do it simply helter-skelter that you throw in seeds, you know, these different types and intermingle them, you know, without any distinction.
Well, you're talking strictly about grains then.
All right. Well, it could be grains, it could be other things too. No, we're not talking about flowers because we don't eat flowers.
Okay.
I mean, kelaim applies, right. Kelaim applies to foods that we eat. Then we have another pasuk also that speaks about kelaim in another way. Okay? Speaks about kelaim, what we would call kilei habeged. In other words, what are we prohibited as far as a beged is concerned? What kelaim are prohibited? Right. Wilden, semer or pishtim. Okay?
What?
Semer or pishtim. Semer is wool and pishtim is flax. You're not allowed to have a garment. Exactly. Shatnez is kilayim. It's kilei habeged. Okay? So shatnez is kilayim when it applies to the area of clothing. Okay? Not allowed to have a garment which contains both linen and wool in it. Okay? This is why, you know, we have people who are boideg. In other words, they examine a garment to make sure that you don't have both linen and wool in the same garment, and so on. And because that would be a prohibition of the Torah to wear such a garment. Okay? Alright. So that's also called kilayim in the Torah. And then, in connection with the kilayim in the field, it says also uskuas hakorim. Not only the kilayim of the field, you know, the sodeh, but also it says usvuas hakorim, also the grain that grows in the vineyard. Okay, so in other words, you would not be permitted to plant grain in the midst of a vineyard either. You have to separate them. All right, but now, what is the gezeirah shavah? The gezeirah shavah over here is the fact that in both of these psukim, we see what. The word tvuas. Okay?
Tvuas.
Yeah, tvuas. So, tvuas and so on. Okay. So, in other words, that is the commonality. Therefore, what do we deduce from this? We deduce from this, A, that tvuas hakorim, you understand? In other words, the law then would apply to the vineyard. Okay? In other words, the grapes, the wine, and so on and so forth, correct?
Right.
And from the other one, the Hosek al-Chem, was so that